Okay? And let's go a little further with the next chart. Now, in our work, this is specific work that was in my patent application. This is rhodium. This is called near-infrared spectrometry. And then with this technology, they actually can measure the vibrational frequency of the electron sharing going on between atoms. So they can actually measure sodium and chloride in salt. The bond between a sodium and a chlorine, they can actually find the vibrational frequency. Or they can measure the frequency of H2O. They know where hydrogen and oxygen resonate and where that energy sharing goes on. And so this is water, and this is water, but this right here they have no explanation for. They were total off to explain this. But when you understand that when you produce monoatomic elements, that the last thing you do is produce hydrogen iridide or hydrogen rhodide, and you anneal away the proton, leaving the extra electron. And an extra electron becomes correlated with the time forward electron, and you have a positron-electron pair. And this doublet is there until it begins to superconduct, and then it just disappears. You just have this little peak, and it continues on. There's no more peak. That's when it begins to superconduct. So this is the last step, the very last step it goes through before it superconducts. So what we're looking at here is the positron and the electron pair. But what you're seeing here is a picture of positronium, the positron-electron pair. Now this is the tiniest little doublet I'm ever going to show you. It can't get littler than an electron and a positron. And the world that Max Planck is looking at, you look at the macro world, you have these two big doublets just collapse. Right here we have the tiniest system, but it also collapses right here in the center. And there's where the electromagnetic zero point is. Here's an electron, the tiniest quantum oscillator is dipping into the zero point. Here's the positron, the tiniest quantum oscillator dipping into the zero point. And so where's the zero point? It's right between them. Absolutely guarantee it. That's where it is. I didn't say this is a frequency. I said this is where it is. Don't get confused. I'm not trying to contradict this right here. I'm saying this is where it is. I'm not saying this is what it is, frequency it vibrates at. Okay, let's go to the next one. And here is iridium. And once again, here's water. And here's water. And here's this doublet. Where's the electromagnetic zero point? Right here between the two of them. Right there. So what do we get when we have electromagnetic zero point? This is the closest and most accurate gun sight I can build for you. You can't build anything more exact than this, because this is as tiny as it gets, and right between them is the zero point. Now what's there? Here is Ben Taub's book, Stalking the Wild Pendulum, most of you are familiar with. And here is what happens. Nuclear physicists are trying to crunch wavelengths shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. They literally compress them like an accordion. The waves get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, and they squeeze it tighter, and they get up and down, up and down. They squeeze it tighter and tighter, and they get stacking almost on top of themselves. And what they're looking for is to compress these wavelengths so tight that the wave stacks on top of itself. Now, if they ever can crunch these waves to the point that they stack on top of themselves, we have an electromagnetic zero point, or an infinity. And when we finally get that, we've got everything. We've got fusion. We've got the Big Bang. We've got the beginning of all matter. We've got everything comes from the zero point, right? Right, okay. Now what happens? Everybody's looking way the heck and gone out there for it. But where does it get produced? It gets produced back here in the near infrared. Because what happens is long, because it's a very long wavelength. It's a long one. It's not even short at all. And lollygogging along, it's taking its easy time. And it comes up to zero point, and it bends, and it runs away from you in time. Just like this. And as it bends, it produces a peak of energy, which is the vibrational heat that comes off an electron. And out of it, it comes, and it continues on, and it produces the energy we call a positron. So you end up with a peak here and a peak here. But relative to you, it runs away from you, stacking on top of itself. Because it's running away from you. It's a big, long wavelength, but it's running away from you. And so relative to you, it's stacking on top of itself. Or you have the singularity. Relative to you, you have created the singularity. So where do you find this singularity? It's within the specter of warmth. So where do you find it? You find it in you. It's where all matter comes from. It's where all energy comes from. It's all protons, all neutrons, all electrons. Everything you know and every experience comes out of the zero point. And where do you find that? It's within you. Yeah. Yeah. Now, what is this? It's two waves equal and opposite. It's the electron wave, and it's the positron wave, the mirror image of it. So we have two waves here, equal and opposite. So we have a null. Can't be measured, right? It's a superconductor. Can't be measured. But it's not nothing. It's everything. What is the vibrational frequency of it? That's right. It's zero. Well, actually, it's not exactly zero. It has a width. A tiny little vibration that is exactly the vibration of the vacuum. It's called Planck's frequency. It is a frequency so far beyond anything we can imagine, we'll never produce it. Max Planck theorized exactly what it is. It's way, 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 way up there. You go way past gamma. It's way up here someplace. Where does it come from, though? It's the near infrared. Where do you find it? Where does God live? It's right there in the near infrared. Well, what is the frequency? It's way the heck gone up there. But it actually is produced right here, within us all. That's where it emanates from, at the electromagnetic zero point. Between plus one and minus one. Absolutely guarantee it. So where does he live? Right here within us. Where do you look for God? Go within yourself, because that's where you'll find it. So the next one. Now, here is Hal Puthoff. Once again, everything for nothing. He's actually working with Casimir effects, explaining that there is this attraction between atoms, and it's a great, interesting paper to read. It's just an example of what he's writing. Let's go to the next one. In the Sciences magazine, here's one that I just gave Jay-Z a copy of, the Sciences, November, December 1994. Beyond E equals MC squared. A first glimpse of a universe without mass. And what they're saying, people, is that gravity is not real. Therefore, mass is not real. Therefore, time is not real. Now, Jay-Z was so delighted to see this. He said, gosh, Dave, I gotta have a copy of this. This is exactly what I've been saying. We catch up. Just give us time. Anyway, Puthoff is the author that I've been talking to and working with. This is out of a paper called Gravity as a Zero-Point Fluctuation Force. It's published in Physical Review A, 1989. And what he did is he took Sakharov, the Nobel laureate theory. Sakharov, in 1968, published a paper where he said, gravity is not a field. We're never going to find gravity if we look for it as a field. Because gravity is produced when the protons, neutrons, and electrons of matter interact with the vacuum energy. It's this bathing and swimming they're doing all the time with this vacuum energy, that interaction is what produces what we call gravity. Now, he came up with this theory in 1968. Now, it's a great theory, except where's the reality? You know, it's a great theory, but he says if you take matter away, you don't have gravity. Matter has to be there for there to be gravity, because matter produces what we call gravity. Okay? Hal Puthoff took that theory, and he says, I'm going to develop the mathematics of this. So here he does this whole paper on the mathematics of zero-point energy. And in his calculations and in the mathematics, he said, equation 56 was derived for the case in which 3 degrees of freedom for particle motion are assumed. Now, that's most atoms in the universe are 3 degrees of motion. But for the two-dimensional jitterbug motion assumed in our case with the number of dimensions equal to 2, geometric considerations require that the gravitational attraction be reduced by a factor of n divided by 3 squared, or 4/9. So his mathematics says that when matter begins to interact in two dimensions, as opposed to three dimensions, it should lose 4/9 of its gravitational weight, or it should weigh 56%. This is exactly what our stuff did. So I said, hey, this is really nifty. This is the way physics is supposed to work, people. You're supposed to write out a theory and then prove it experimentally. That's the way it's supposed to work. Unfortunately, it never works that way. What we do is we see something we can't explain, then we write physics to explain it. In this case, they actually did it right. They actually theorized this, and our stuff actually weighs the 5/9. When it goes snow white, it loses 4/9 of its gravitational traction. Now, this is really important because these are the spirit atoms. These are the atoms that are in your body that flow the light of life. These are the atoms that are 5/9 here and 4/9 in the fifth dimension, where all of us are connected. So the obvious question is, where does the 4/9 go? It's in the fifth dimension. Just laugh at that. You think that's funny? You know, and it's real simple. You got 5/9 here, where's the 4/9? That's in the fifth dimension. So your 5/9 here and your 4/9 gone. Or if you like it better, let's just say your 4/9 with God. Does that make you feel more comfortable? Your 4/9 with God, where all of us are with Him in that same place. Okay? So if you think about somebody over there, there is a connection of 4/9 to you, your spirit, with them. Right? Okay. So there's the physical connection with people through the fifth dimension. Now let's go a little further with what Hal showed me when I was down there. This is out of Classical Quantum Gravity, Volume 11, 1994. The warp drive hyper-fast travel within general relativity. It is now shown within the framework of general relativity and without the introduction of wormholes, it is possible to modify space-time in a way that allows a spaceship to travel with an arbitrarily large speed by a purely local expansion of space-time behind the spaceship and an opposite contraction in front of it. Motion faster than the speed of light as seen by observers outside the disturbed region is possible. The resulting distortion is reminiscent of a warp drive of science fiction. However, just as happens with wormholes, exotic matter will be needed in order to generate a distortion of space-time like the ones discussed here. So what we got to get is exotic matter. What's exotic matter? Matter that has less than a true gravitational attraction. So he said, Dave, look here. He said, here is space-time. It can be depicted graphically. And he says, when you lose gravitational attraction, it's gravity that determines your space-time. So literally, when you lose 4/9 of your gravitational attraction, you're actually bending space-time. And you know, I never thought about that. You're right. You're bending space-time. And he says, well, Dave, even better yet, he says, what we really need is a material that has no gravitational attraction at all. A material that weighs less than nothing. Exotic matter. Pure and simple. Less than nothing. And I said, well, look at my graph. Look at my charts. I showed him the graphs I showed you guys. And he looked at it and he says, Dave, when it weighs less than nothing, you shouldn't be able to see it. I said, that's right. He says, you know why you can't see it? It's no longer in these three dimensions. It has withdrawn all into the fifth dimension. Now, the implications here, people, are really serious. It really is serious. Let's go to the next one. I know. You already know about this. Yeah, here is Putoff. He's actually commenting on this article about Miguel Albuquerque. He's talking about his paper. He's talking about the theory. He actually says, therefore, the proper conclusion to be drawn by consideration of engineered metric vacuum energy effects is that with sufficient technological means as to appear magic at present, or to use Arthur C. Clarke's phrase characterizing a highly advanced technological civilization, travel at speeds exceeding the conventional velocity of light could occur without the violation of fundamental physical laws. And we might add, this could in principle be done without recourse to concepts as extreme as wormhole transversal. However, clearly exotic matter field states, e.g. macroscopic Casper-like negative energy density vacuum states, which is exactly what I showed you, less than no gravitational attraction. As a result, the possibility of reduced time interstellar travel, either by advanced extraterrestrial civilizations at present or ourselves in the future, is not, as naive consideration might hold, fundamentally constrained by physical principles. Okay, so what they're saying, people, is that your consciousness, the atoms of your consciousness, can literally travel in space-time. They can go anywhere they want to go, anytime they want. The problem is your physical body has to stay here. Now, the ancient Egyptians, I think, understood this better than anybody. They said we have a physical body that we must feed physical food to so we can grow and become what we're meant to be. But they also said we have a light body, which they call the Ka, and they said you have to feed the light body so it can grow and become what it's meant to be. Well, when you feed your light body, you're feeding your consciousness. You're actually feeding it with the asymmetrically formed high-spin states of atoms. But these atoms in your body literally interact with the DNA. They literally interact with the cells of your body. They actually interact with the, what do you call them, carbules? And when you understand that when they are sufficient density in your body so that quantum coherence occurs, that literally everything begins to act as one, and they are capable of totally bending space-time. Totally bending space-time where even your material body disappears. Now, I'd like for you to ponder this just a little bit, because this is really heavy duty what I'm sharing with you. Because when you come to the point that you really accept this, it's kind of like the guy going over Niagara Falls on a tightrope. I tell you about this one. All right, there's this guy walking over Niagara Falls, and he's walking on this tightrope, and he's pushing a wheelbarrow. And he's going across the Niagara Falls pushing this wheelbarrow. And all these people are gathered on the side of Niagara Falls, and they're cheering him on. They're rooting and hollering for him. Oh, come on, come on, come on. And he's coming along. And they're just, oh, come on, we know you can make it. And he's coming along. He finally gets to the other side. He steps off the tightrope. And they go, yay, we knew you were going to make it. We knew you were going to make it. And he says, do you think I can go back? Oh, yeah, we know you can go back. He says, do you have faith I can go back? And they says, yeah, we have faith. And he says, get in the wheelbarrow.